Blog Talk Radio.
Hi,
Gene. Kim.
Oh, yes.
We're having phone problems.
We're having phone problems, which I kind of suspected. So let's just get right to it here.
Okay.
Could you, Gene, I'm going to let you go ahead and read the opening.
Okay.
And I'm going to call our first guest while you're doing that. Okay? Thank you.
Okay. Do we start now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Welcome to CrimeWire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crime to find answers and seek justice. The CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private investigator and author, Denny Griffith, retired investigator and author, Tom Shamshak, private investigator, and Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there on top of the crime at the top of their game. CrimeWire is the place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in anytime during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And the CrimeWire team information on an unsolved or suspicious death or want to be considered for a segment on our on a case for future show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com.
And Gene, let me just take it from here. Denny and Susan have the night off. I am Kim Colton, Director of Research for CrimeWire, and my co-host for this evening is the wonderful Gene Cervantes, victim advocate and consultant for Citizens Against Homicide. Hi, Gene. Thank you for filling in with me tonight. I did have problems with the Skype, with the switchboard, getting Linda on board with us, our first case. So, Linda, are you with us?
I am.
Great. Okay, Gene, we're firing on all cylinders now. So, go ahead and introduce our first case.
Okay. Thank you. Christopher Rudo of Buffalo, New York, was murdered in his apartment in January of 2010. He was 32 years old. Buffalo police still list the case as unsolved and have told his mother, Linda Olinsky, that the killer used blunt force trauma to end Christopher's life. Police also told her that it appeared to be a crime of passion and that Chris probably knew his killer. There was no evidence of forced entry or a break-in. Whoever killed Chris was let into or had means to enter the apartment. Joining us to discuss the case is Christopher's mother, Linda Olinsky. Welcome, Linda, to the show.
Thank you, Jean.
Linda, would you like to tell us a little bit about what transpired that day? How you...
The day that I received the call?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I was at work, and I received a phone call from Detective from Buffalo, New York, Tony Bartello. And he informed me that my son had been found in this apartment, murdered. and didn't give me much information. He said he would call me back when I got home.
Okay.
Now,
you weren't, that must have been just absolutely startling to obviously to hear. And
I didn't believe it at first.
Okay.
Okay, because this month prior, I'd received a phone call telling me that somebody believed my son was dead in his apartment, and everything was okay.
How much prior was that? Wasn't that like a month or two? Or
no,
month?
That was the week of October, the weekend of October 18th.
Okay.
So it was about 3 or 4 months prior to Chris's murder.
Yeah, and you got a call.
So, I thought I was getting a prank call again,
Mm-hmm.
And
well, tell us about that call. You received a call from, I guess it was an ex-boyfriend?
Yes, his prior partner,
and he had said that he called you hysterical.
Called me hysterical. He was screaming and crying and carrying on that he believed that my son was dead in his apartment. And I kept saying, what makes you think he's dead? Why? I just know he is. He won't answer the phone, and he won't answer the door, and he won't let me in the gate, and I just know he's dead. And I go, calm down. I said, call apartment management, ask them to let you in, or have somebody go in and get in and check to see if he is okay. And this went on until very late at night, the calling back and forth, calling back and forth. Come to find out, my son just didn't want to answer the door to this person. So there was another person with this partner, prior partner. Chris allowed him to come up to the door. Chris opened the door, spoke with him. He asked the guy if he would take the dog. Chris had a dog. If he would take the dog down and to take it to the rep so it could go potty. Chris had had 2 surgeries on his leg. He had fallen down a flight of stairs and had broken his leg. He had had 2 surgeries because an infection had set in. So he wasn't able to get up and down the stairs and to go out in the snow with this walking cast that he had. The guy, I spoke with him, and he said that was the best Chris looked in a long time. And he was really surprised how well Chris looked. So everything was fine and good. Okay. So when I did receive this phone call from the police officer, I at first thought, this is just one of those phone calls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it wasn't until, yes.
I was going to mention that the autopsy report indicated that he was beaten to death, just like the Detective Borelli had mentioned that he was victim of blunt force trauma.
Yes.
Now, there was no robbery, no defensive wounds.
No robbery.
And is there any speculation as to the motive?
None that the police have given me. The police won't even talk to me or answer my phone calls. I haven't been able to speak to a police officer in over 6 months.
I know the feeling. I've also been ignored. I've made phone calls on your behalf to the Buffalo Police Department several times, only to be told, oh, yeah, we'll give the message to Detective Borelli. And needless to say, he has not returned any of the phone calls. So I know exactly where you're coming from. Now, there are a lot of conflicting stories.
There's so many, and I can start giving you a lot of conflicting stories.
Just give us one, if you don't mind.
Okay. When I arrived in Buffalo, New York, we were told that my son's pickup was found in the behind the apartment complex. Okay?
Uh-huh.
The back side of it. And I thought that was very strange, knowing that my son had a broken leg. That would have been so out of the realm for him. It would have made it more difficult for access to getting into the building. Then, months and months later, I'm talking like 8 or 9 months later, in a phone conversation with the detective, he informed me that the pickup was found outside of the front main gates. So there you are.
Yeah. And in addition to that, it's my understanding that the apartment was wiped clean, spotless. Not even Christopher's fingerprints or DNA.
DNA.
Yeah.
That is what we've been told.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I should believe that, because I'm finding it hard to believe anything that I have been told.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the conflicting stories. But we were told that the apartment had been wiped clean. We are also told that his pickup had been wiped clean. His container with his CDs and everything was still left in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how what was done to my son. He was so brutally beaten. How there could not have been any DNA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's almost impossible.
And I guess that there were certain things. A vacuum cleaner bag was never brought into evidence. Sheets in the washer were never taken. And a profiler in this case would be helpful also.
Oh, most definitely. A profiler would be a big help.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, upon bringing my son's belongings and having them sent to California, I discovered, okay, they told me that the apartment was wiped clean. Well, when I got my son's vacuum cleaner here, it was full. And nobody ever bothered to check that?
Yeah.
When we got there, the first thing I did was go into the laundry room, and there were sheets inside of the wash machine that had been washed. But nobody bothered to take them out to check for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was done with it.
And now, who other than Chris had keys to the apartment?
As far as I know, only Chris.
Okay.
Now, there's people that you would say who worked for the apartment complex that would have had keys, or what do they call them, SOBs?
Yeah,
the plastic
maintenance,
cars.
Maintenance crew or somebody.
Maintenance,
yeah.
Anybody who worked for the apartment complex.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was something about the maintenance man and the painter were interviewed and cleared.
Yes, they were brought in and questioned. It was my understanding that they were going to be brought back in for more questioning. As of today, I do not know that that has ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I mentioned that there were no defensive wounds on Christopher. However, he had... my understanding, he had abrasions on his knuckles, which would indicate to me that
means he was fighting back.
Yeah, there was offensive.
So you would think that there'd be some DNA somewhere.
That's right. That's why I said I'm finding it very hard to believe what I've been told by the police.
You know, well, and just to play devil's advocate, they're not going to tell you everything.
Everything, I know that.
Yeah, hopefully they're not telling you because they would jeopardize the integrity of their investigation, hopefully, if they're doing an investigation.
Yeah.
Problem is, we don't know because they don't communicate with the family.
And exactly.
Yeah, they don't realize how important it is just to say, hey, we're working the case, we're following leads, we're doing this, we're doing that, but we're not getting anything. So
I hope that they never, never have to go through what I've been going through. I know that Detective Tony, I know he has children. I've heard them on the phone in the background when I've talked during the first year. So I just pray that he'll never have to go through this.
Yeah,
his statement to me in one conversation was, you and 10 other mothers want to know who killed their child. Well, I hope he is never one of those 10 mothers or fathers.
Yeah. Shame on him for forgetting the oath he took when he became a law enforcement officer. You know, protect and serve. Anyway, Linda, I had also wanted to let you know that I have been making a lot of contact with a source for a possible billboard, and I wanted to ask about a reward. Now, bring me up to date on the status of the reward.
All I know is I was told that Crime Stoppers,
okay,
they will put the money up for a reward, that only the police have to do it. And the last, that was my last conversation with Tony.
Okay.
And he said he was working on it.
And that was how long ago?
Oh, like I said, at least, I know at least 6 months, if not longer.
Well, I'm going to be gone for about 8 days, starting Saturday, 7 or 8 days, I'm not sure. And when I come back, I'll start making some phone calls and follow up on this promise for a reward.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll try to get the billboard. In California, it's easy to get billboards for us, but out of state, it's a long, drawn-out process. So bear with me, be patient, and I'll try to do what I can to get that taken care of.
Okay. That would be great, Jean. You're like the miracle man anyway. You can always... You always get it done, let me tell you. Besides other things, well, what else did the detective say to you? I mean, he said, when you said you wanted answers, what did he say to you?
He said he had other cases, and like I said, he said, you and 10 other brothers.
You and,
you know, and
mother.
He left it at that.
Yeah.
You know, and I go, but I'm just not one of those other mothers.
No,
I
you're
just,
not.
I said, he told me when I was in New York, he said, if you don't call and bug us, then that tells us you don't care, so we're not going to care. And he said, so you call us, and that way we will keep pushing. Well, I've called. I've left messages. My oldest son has called. He's left messages. He's sent emails. He's text messaged. None of those calls have been answered.
Mm-hmm.
My stepson and his wife from Arizona have called and called and called.
Mm-hmm.
They have never received any calls back.
Yeah.
So
there's got to be, he's got to have a superior, somebody. I think he knows maybe that you're stuck out in California and far enough away that he doesn't have to deal with it if he doesn't want to, or they have some strict, or his chief has some strict policies where his hands are tied and he was told you cannot talk to anybody. I just wonder about that. But
well, I talked to him about a psychic.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And he told me that that had been approved by his captain.
Mm-hmm.
But see, again, there's been no follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he kind of poo-pooed the whole psychic thing. And
yes.
I don't care what your beliefs are. You know, bring in the National Guard if you have to. I don't care if it's a psychic or who it is. I want to have more. If I were in your shoes, I don't care who it is. I want some help here, and
I
will take it from any source I can, and then and figure it out later. You know,
I can't tell you how many emails I have sent out. I sent an email to Paula Zahn's.
Mm-hmm.
So I made contact with America's Most Wanted just prior to them going off air. And, of course, they notified me that they were going to go off air, hoping that maybe they would do a feature on my son since he had been on their program before. But, you know, I'm going in every direction I can go
mm-hmm.
to get some help or just to maybe somebody can give me a name or an email
mm-hmm.
where I can go for help.
Well, I right before the show, Linda, I did find information on the Freedom of Information Act for New York and what you need to do, and I'm going to be sending that to you in an email. And but I did want to kind of just touch on his ex-boyfriend, this ex-partner
okay.
of his. Now, what I found very interesting was that, well, he was older than Chris, and he was interviewed by the police, and
yes.
he passed a polygraph.
That is correct.
But given, and I don't know if Jean, I don't know how you feel about this, or Linda, but given what he does for a living, it's possible that he was able to beat that.
Yeah, I don't know that much about
me either.
Okay.
I could
probably
check on a source. In fact, I know
thing,
I can.
Okay, great. But that would be terrific. The other thing I'm thinking of is that I thought was extremely interesting is that John, or his ex-partner, was having money problems. And he had... just a different array of money problems. And interestingly, him and his parents were listed as beneficiaries on life insurance policies.
The parents were listed as far as to deal with the house, sell of the house.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
And I don't know all the details because it was the parents' attorney who handled everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
The partner benefited from whatever insurance policy there was and whatever 401k there was.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
You know, I'll follow up on the billboard, the reward, and the polygraph expert that I have access to. The other question, the other comment I wanted to make was I asked Linda to provide us with a victim profile for Christopher, and that's in our monthly newsletter, citizensagainsthomicide.org. People can go to that, click on to newsletter, and in the October newsletter is Christopher's victim profile. I will be sending a lot of copies to the various media in Buffalo area, TV, newspapers, and any other person that Linda could think of to give me the name of, contact me after the show or tomorrow. And then we'll try to get as much information, publicity out there to keep this in the public eye.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, because we got to keep this alive because it's grown. Mm-hmm. We don't want it to grow any colder.
Yeah, and as far as I know that nobody from the police department, you know, I kept saying, the time frame of his murder was right around New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
being a person of love for music and being alone, he would have been out and about.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept telling him, I gave him the names of the places where he would go and stuff, and I don't even know that any of that has ever been checked out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we'll continue to try to make contact with Buffalo Police Department. Necessary, we'll just bypass Tony Borelli and go to the supervisor.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. And
I've left messages on the machine saying, you know, this is the detective, but I want to speak with the person above, you know, the detective. Never have gotten a phone call.
Yeah. Well.
And it would be nice if they could check out some of these places where Chris would visit, because
right.
Wasn't he a DJ or?
Yeah, he had all his own DJ equipment,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, he would do it for, well, he worked at Geico, and he had mm-hmm. a karaoke machine, and he'd take it to work for parties,
mm-hmm.
and he would DJ, you know, on the outside, and at his home, he'd have parties for, you know, friends and stuff, and he was teaching one of the girls from work, you know, how to DJ, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, his love for music, I mean, he would get off from work, you know, at 1-2 in the morning and go and listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so.
Very quickly, you know, we're going to try and do as much as we can to communicate or make contact with the Buffalo Police Department. I'm apprehensive, a little apprehensive
mm-hmm.
about whether or not we're successful, because with Borelli right on down, even Detective Heron that I talked with back in April, I was asked a bunch of questions, and all I wanted to do was talk to Tony Borelli. And this detective
mm-hmm.
kept asking me questions, and I talked about putting a billboard up and looking into a reward. And she made the comment, a very weird comment about, what about all the others? What are you doing for everybody else? And I said,
yeah, and that's
nobody's
the attitude I've been getting.
Yeah, nobody's reached out to us other than the family of Christopher. And she got a little belligerent and finally said in a very curt way, fine, I'll just give the message to Borelli. So I'm hoping that the whole, and this isn't not in any way an indictment against the Buffalo Police Department. It's just a couple people that maybe had a bad day, I hope. And
mm-hmm.
we hope for the best.
Correct.
But,
yeah, we hope for the best.
Yeah.
And yeah. I do want to mention that Christopher does have a Facebook page.
Yes.
If you type in Christopher Rudo on Facebook, it'll come up. And if anybody has any information, they should contact the Buffalo Police at the department's tip line, which is 716-847-2255, which also is the text a tip number. There have been other crimes in the Buffalo area that were more possibly hate crimes centered on individuals who were gay or whatever. But this one really, really, Christopher, it just seems like a crime of passion. And, Gene, another thing I wanted to talk to you about was about getting reward money through Geico, where he worked in Amherst. What do you think of that? Because he was a corporate trainer with Geico.
Yeah, I had asked Linda to look into that. I don't know. We could still work on that. Linda and I could do that. So if you don't mind calling me tomorrow, Linda, I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay. I think we're
close
out of time.
Late after work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's all the time we have for this case, Linda. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Kim, so much for having us on.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate it. And if you'd like to, Linda, you can hang up or you can stick around and just listen to our next story.
All right, thank you.
Our next case. Thank you, and God bless you, Linda, and thank you so much for being on with us tonight.
Talk with
you
later,
thank
Linda.
Thank you, Jean.
Okay.
Okay, so our second case is that of Heather Brodus, a 27-year-old woman who was found dead Monday, August 30th, 2010, in the 300 block of East 56th Street in Long Beach, California. A passerby found Heather's body lying on the sidewalk about 6:30 a.m. and called 911. This is according to a Long Beach Police Department news release. The Long Beach Fire Department responded to the scene and discovered Heather lying in a parkway. She had been shot more than once in the torso. Based on preliminary information, police believe Brodus was shot at some point the previous night. Some of the neighbors who lived in the area remembered hearing gunshots at approximately 2:30 a.m., but no one called the police. Shootings in that area are not uncommon. The motive for the shooting remains unknown. We're joined by Heather's mother, Nancy Smith, and homicide detective Donald Goodman of the Long Beach Police Department. Welcome, Nancy and Detective Goodman, to the show. Hello.
Hello.
Kim, I might add that Detective Goodman has a another commitment, so we're going to get to him first. We're going to get to him
excellent.
First. He's been kind enough to agree for or to participate for about 10 minutes or so. So
excellent.
Okay.
I'll let you take it.
Okay. Detective Goodman, what can you tell us about the case that would not compromise the integrity of your investigation?
Well, we've taken all the we actually spoke with a lot of people, and a lot of neighbors have certain things to say, but it doesn't seem like too many people saw anything. The shots were heard around the 2 o'clock hour. And
in the a.m.?
Yeah, in the morning,
and
the body,
yeah.
Body's found approximately 4 hours later.
Yeah.
And that's pretty consistent. And what we'd like to do is maybe get the public's help on if anybody's seen or heard anything. I'd like to get more specific on the details. And a lot of times, as time goes, people will eventually call in, and that's what we're hoping for tonight.
Well, and I might add that Detective Lash is one of the detectives also working the case. And I've had contact with him, and we've talked about billboards and getting a governor's reward. But the governor's reward is contingent upon you having your department having no further clues or tips or witnesses, et cetera. In other words, you have to be a brick wall before you get the consideration for a proclamation for a reward. So we'll be trying that in hopes of helping you. I might add also that August newsletter for Citizens Against Homicide, Heather's victim profile was featured in the in that newsletter. And again, people could go to the archives, to the website at www.citizensagainsthomicide.org and click on to newsletters and go back to August, and they could read Heather's profile. Detective Goodman, I had just a couple other questions. With regards to the early morning hours, did it appear was bang bang one shooter or multiple shooters, or do you even want to comment on that?
I can only speculate on what we believe. It's multiple shots. More likely one shooter, but it's like I said, it's speculation.
Okay, I
understand. And right now there is a $10,000 reward being offered by the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors.
Oh, thank you for
reward. A lot of times people would want to call in and
fantastic.
Thank you for reminding me. And it's that $10,000 that we have plans of putting on the billboard. So.
Heather did have a boyfriend. We already spoken with him. He's not completely ruled out, but you know, we're looking at all leads that we can get.
Okay.
A lot of times people might be afraid to call in, but even the smallest little fact, no matter how small it might be, that might be the thing that solves the whole thing. So hoping that somebody will come forward.
That's exactly why we put up billboards, because some of the biggest crimes are solved with the little reminder that, hey, this young lady was murdered. If you heard anything, please call, pick up the phone and call in a tip. And lo and behold, the snowball begins and you get one tip, another tip, another tip, and pretty soon the case is solved. You know. Well,
and Detective Goodman, I just want to say that the number for our listeners to call if for any tips or any information is 562-570-7244.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you have another commitment, Detective, and we really appreciate your participation tonight, and we hope for the best, and I'll keep in contact with you and Detective Lash.
Yeah, you know how to get a hold of us, and no matter how small the tip might be, let us know. We'll follow up and go through everything you need to go through.
Well, your participation is surely appreciated.
And thank you so much. You guys are doing a great job, and much appreciated. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank
you. No problem.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Bye.
You bet. Thank you. Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, you're on.
Oh, hi. I didn't know if you could hear me. Very interesting. Thank you for thanking them, because they are awesome. They have a heck of a job to do. And they really can't do it without people saying something and speaking up about what they know.
Right.
So I'm constantly thanking them for their time and their effort and their energy. They're always there, you know, if I call them. They do not typically give out a lot of detail, like you heard, you know. But they're always there to take information, you know, and they will follow up on any leads, anything that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
now,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, well, I was just going to, regarding the boyfriend, I know he had mentioned that they had interviewed him, and I just thought we could talk a little bit about Heather's relationship with him. They in the beginning, they were just friends. They just started out as friends.
Right.
But then when their relationship turned serious, he became quite controlling.
Right. That's what we heard. This was somebody who wasn't very well known to our family. He was introduced to us as a friend. She, at that time in her life, she had ended a relationship months before and was going solo and focusing on, you know, work and getting a place for her and her daughter, and she met this friend. So from there, she somehow it evolved, and this is maybe in a matter of 6 months, to next thing you know, she was going to move out and be with her friend. And we didn't really know this young man, although we had met him. We didn't really know much about him. And so after the fact, after she was murdered, we started to hear stories from some of her friends that had met him. And they weren't very positive. They were things like he wouldn't let her out of his sight. would go, she'd say, I have to be back at a certain time or he'll go all erratic on me. At one point, I was in August. I was leaving on vacation, and I hadn't seen or heard from her, and I was trying to get in touch with her to go on vacation with me because I wanted time with her to find out what was going on. I'd seen this change in her behavior, this distance, and I couldn't really, you know, get to her to talk to her about it, but she declined to go on the trip. And that was unfortunate because there was flaws on that trip when she was murdered. So I got the word. And then maybe a few months later, I talked to one of her friends who had told us that they weren't close friends with us, but she knew them, and told us that she had tried to leave him, and he had threatened her, he had threatened us. And so she ended up going back to him. And that was sometime prior to her murder. I don't know if the day that she went back, you know, that she was murdered, if she was with him that day. I do not know. It just, you know, it's all circumstantial at this point. And so it just sounds like, you know, a duck. It quacks like a duck. It looks like a duck. So we're thinking he's, you know, definitely the top of the list. But the detectives are looking into all kinds of things, and so they have to make sure they're getting the right guy.
And with regards to the shooting itself, there's no evidence of robbery.
Not that they're telling me.
Okay. The reason I make that comment is that it had to be a personal thing. It's the only thing I could come up with. If somebody comes up and shoots another person, they generally have a reason. They wouldn't give the purse, or they wouldn't give up their wallet, or they wouldn't give up something in terms of a robbery, a laptop or what have you. But there was nothing to indicate a motive of robbery. So somebody knows something.
Right. There wasn't anything that they're saying that looked like a robbery, and that it does look more of a personal nature, either maybe domestic violence or, you know, he wasn't, from what I understand, he's not a real good guy, so, you know, maybe he felt she knew too much that he couldn't let her go. I really don't know. I mean, that's something I'd really like. Yeah.
And Jean, when you say that, someone must know something. And Nancy, if you will permit me, you had emailed me something that I would love to share with our audience because it was so profound to me. You had said, I would like to convey the need for someone who knows something to speak up and tell what they know. In my opinion, anyone who knows about her or anyone's murder and keeps silent is an accessory to murder. Silence allows murderers to feel they are safe and will get away with violence and killing. Evil persists when good men do nothing.
Right.
And that just touched me so much, Nancy, because it's so true. I somebody knows something. They always
do.
Right. And your request that they come forward is simply put the right thing to do, to come forward.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I do understand that, you know, just like this young woman who I spoke with that Heather had shared that he had threatened her and he had threatened us. This girl is terrified of this guy because he made threats and now Heather's dead. So she saw him at the store one day and he said, I know you. And she said, no, you don't. And she tried to get away from him because she's terrified. So people might know, but they're in a position of maybe they live with the person or they, you know, are in the same circle. And this person's a killer, or possibly a killer. So, you know, they're afraid. So I think people need to know that there are protections out there, and there are resources mm-hmm. out there for protection or relocation if they need to be safe in order to speak. So I think that's not said enough.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. The other part is sometimes people hold it in their pocket for something to benefit them. And in that case, you're really an accessory. because you know, Heather deserves to have justice, and the streets need to be safer with this man not walking around and doing what he's doing.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And he also claimed that he had ties to the Crips.
Correct.
Which is, you know, and when he did threaten her and you and her family, I should say, you weren't aware of it at the time he did it.
No.
And you had met him a couple of times.
Right.
But yet he doesn't show up for a funeral service, and he never contacts you at all. Nothing.
No, not once. Not a phone call, not, you know, she had over 200 people at her service, including past boyfriends, and everybody made an attempt to come to the service or come to the house and express their, you know, condolences. And this guy didn't call, didn't come over. I haven't seen her from him. So that says something to me. It makes you wonder why that's the case. Now, he had ties with Crips, he claimed, and he had a tattoo. He had some kind of tattoo that other people saw. So, but the detective felt that he's an older guy. He's like 8 years older than she. So he's not close in and hanging out with them. And they feel he uses that, that might be where he comes from, and he uses that more as intimidation factor, you know, throw his weight around.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. But definitely, you know, and if it is him, and now, you know, again, until they really, you know, get a confession, someone speaks up that they saw something, they heard, you know, he told them, it just seems to me this kind of person would brag about it. Look what I did. There was no attempt to, like, cover up the body, you know, or hide it. So it does feel like, you know, it was a heat of the moment, you know, anger, and then he took off, or else he left her there for a reason. I don't know. And they were in Long Beach. Well, she was in Long Beach when she was murdered. And the Crips, where he's affiliated with, is in L.A., over in L.A. So I guess he goes out of his area, you know, to do whatever he's doing. So, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, the Crips are going to be after me if I say something, right? You know. No, it doesn't seem like he's in close cahoots with that gang or whatever. But he definitely claims that he was one of them.
You know, the other thing that comes to mind, Nancy, is the neighborhood where Heather was found. Shootings are not uncommon in that area. And that just begs the question, do you think she was just simply in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Well, it's funny you say that, Gene, because I have this theory that all homicide victims are in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, I stand corrected.
Right? So it isn't uncommon, and unfortunately in Southern California, there's a lot of neighborhoods like that. And you get, you know, that's what the people that live there say. We met a lot of the neighbors who did visit the site. And a lot of nice, low-income, working families live in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not like it's just, you know, only the gangs, right? They're only the bad people that are running around.
Right.
you know, these families and people trying to just get by and live. And then, you know, they just happen to have this nice little place where they can, I guess, conduct business and or hide or something. I really don't understand that. But I do understand that the neighbors that live there, they don't want to say anything. You know, and that's heartbreaking because they're protecting the killer, and that is only going to assure more of this happens. And then, you know, their family could be at risk, right? They live there.
And you know, Nancy, I'd like to just remind the listening audience that, you know, I can name on very quickly on one hand how many very high notoriety cases, the Night Stalker, the two cousins that were roaming around the Hillside Stranglers, or some, where people knew about them and didn't come forward, and one murder led to another, and then another, and then another, and people who kept quiet said, well, it doesn't concern me, it's not touching my family. Well, lo and behold, it did touch some families. And I'm not saying that they knew and it touched their family. No, but it touches families. It snowballs. The problem is compounded by silence. And these people are out there, the predators, and they prey on innocent men and women, children.
Yep.
And we've got to do something about it as a law-abiding society. We've got to step forward and do the right thing, like I said in the last case.
And, you know, in their minds, in the short term, that's the right thing, protect myself, my little family here, not my neighborhood family or my community family. They're not thinking that way. They're only thinking of what, you know, is survival at the moment. And it is, and it's allowing this evil, this homicide evil, to grow and expand. And then we've got our culture and our media and, you know, the movies and the rap songs, and it all just plays a part in it. And it doesn't mean that if you like that rap music or you, you know, go to that neighborhood that you are bad or you're doing something wrong, but it does, you know, put yourself at jeopardy, or it does almost give permission to that, oh, well, that's the way it is. Well, you shouldn't have been there at that time. You know, and I see that. I go on the Los Angeles Homicide Report website, and they report every homicide, and they put a little blurb, and then the people can comment, and there's always some idiot who is commenting about, you know, well, why were they there at that time, or why were did they go here? You know, we're not really sure how all that played out with Heather at that, those final hours. We know that at some point she was in a car, and probably with the killer in the car. So she wasn't just walking down the street at that time. But it seems that she was standing outside of the car when she was shot. So, you know, it's really hard to say exactly what she was doing and why it was 2 o'clock in the morning and what happened there. If they were, maybe she was with the boyfriend at the time or someone, maybe they were in the car going somewhere, coming back from somewhere, and maybe an argument developed or something. Or maybe, you know, he came and got her. Maybe she was running and hiding from him at the time, and he may have gotten her, maybe tricked her to come out and meet him or something. And he started, I mean, these are just scenarios. We really don't know. That's why we do need, you know, anybody with information. And like the detective said, the smallest piece, because it's all a puzzle. So if everybody puts their piece in, we'll get the whole picture.
Nancy, real quick, is Heather's homicide on the Long Beach Police Department's website?
No, I have not seen it on there.
Okay,
actually.
I'll talk to them. I'll talk to them.
Yeah.
The other thing is, tell us about Facebook.
Oh, yes. Okay. So I created a...
What were you going to say, Kim?
Well, I was just going to say that I've pasted the Facebook page in the chat room. And,
oh, good.
For all those who want to see it. So it is there. And but no, please go ahead.
Okay, that's
I got
great.
It up
and
though.
it's called Justice for Heather. On the Facebook. So it's a Facebook page, Justice for Heaven. And I have included links from the original reporting from the LA Homicide website and a press telegram article that was written in December about a homicide and some other information, pictures, a lot of photos of Heather. So because Heather was very... creative, beautiful girl, young woman, and she could change her look because she's half black and half white, and she could straighten her hair and leave it curly. She, you know, would let it grow long and cut it short. And she wear glasses or not wear glasses, sunglasses, hair up, down. So I put a lot of pictures because people may not recognize her, her look if they only met her once or twice.
People can go to the Facebook page and comment on if they have a tip also information. Okay.
Right.
They can comment or they can message in there, on
good.
Facebook. You can do a private message, so it only goes to me. And I'm the administrator, nobody else's. And any information then, that I can send on to the detectives and that Facebook page, Justice for Heather. Okay.
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay.
And Nancy, we have about 3 minutes left, but I did want to ask you, just even for all the other mothers out there, what have you been doing to generate leads? Because I thought you had some really good ideas that you've been doing. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. What I found is that even though the homicide cases don't get closed here in California, they can grow cold. And what I found out is that if they don't have leads, they can't follow up anything, and that's how the case just sits there. And another case comes and another case comes. So what I found was that I can help by generating leads. So by, doing this blog talk radio is one way, doing the Facebook. I have flyers made both in English and Spanish. I've taken that flyer, and there's several pictures, and it has a little newspaper report about what date and time what happened on it. And I've made that into posters. I've made a huge banner, trying to find out where to hang that. I have T-shirts where we go out and we put flyers on car windows and parking lots. We paper the neighborhood. I contacted a company in New York and have them mail out 10,000 postcards back in February, I think, of last year. And I've done magnets. I take my flyers and I got a magnet made, and it's on the back of my car. I have a few magnets on a few family members' cars. And people see them and they'll go, I want one. And they're only $45. For a 2-foot by 2-foot magnet. And it has the phone number, pictures of her. And I also went to Long Beach University and spoke to a college class of about 90 kids. Figure at least half of them probably live in Long Beach. And they were doing religious studies, and I was speaking about what it's like to be a homicide victim survivor. And how that affects the family and society and that. And then I bought my flyers, and I have my poster, and I hand them out wherever I go. I keep a staple gun in my car and my flyers and wherever the urge, where I see, the metro station. Oh, a lot of people go here, And we're trying to get the billboard with you guys, Citizens Against Homicide. So I contacted some agencies. Crime Stoppers right now, I just contacted them, and they have a new show here in Southern California on Sunday evenings at 11 p.m. where they highlight Southern California unsolved homicides.
Well, I'll get with you on. I'll get with you to get the information. I'll make contact with them again.
Yes, and they
that sounds great.
Yeah.
They're looking for homicide cases to spotlight. This is
okay.
new, so I can get you that information. So I'm trying to get her in the tip line, you know, system.
Okay.
So things like that, and I've had to be kind of creative, you know. And you guys have been wonderful in helping me and reading and hearing other people's stories. Does a lot to help and you know me think of ideas that. Or how to cope with the loss in her and all that comes with a homicide.
Well, Heather,
okay,
Nancy, we're out of time, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nancy, so much for being with us tonight. And I also want to thank Detective Donald Goodman for doing such a fantastic job. And, of course, I also want to thank Linda Olensky. Thanks to the CrimeWire team and our public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com, our next show will be next Tuesday, November 1st. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases and crimes that wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice.
Thank you for joining us tonight on CrimeWire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guests. If you would like your case to be featured on CrimeWire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. To hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer, and the show will automatically play.
Remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. Visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com. God bless from the CrimeWire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffin, Tom Shamshak, and Susan Murphy Milano. Thank you and good night. And
good
thank
night.
You, Gene.
Thank you, Kim.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.